Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Scott Wapner with Jim Cramer. We are live from the New York Stock Exchange this morning. Carl and David have the morning off. We're watching U.S. futures closely because they are tumbling after Iran's top military commander, General Qasem Soleimani, was killed at Baghdad Airport by a U.S. airstrike ordered by President Trump. The Pentagon says Soleimani was actively planning attacks on American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei promising, quote, severe revenge. But the president responding with a tweet of his own. Iran never won a war, but never lost a negotiation, said the president. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran sending crude oil prices higher for our purposes, Jim. Look, futures are off their worst levels. We're still expected to open sharply lower. But the story really focuses on oil and the region of the Middle East and what all of that means for the price of crude.
Right. One of the things I think people have to recognize is there's too much crude. I mean, it just wouldn't this move the needle out 2023? But here's U.S. producers just slamming the futures already. I'm looking at the futures from 6:40 a.m. Thank you, Rusty Brazil from RBN.com. 43 cents impact on 2023. Now, why is that? Because you have major producers who are saying, hallelujah, I am getting an opportunity to be able to sell. And on Wall Street, we're buying. I'd be very careful about that. I think that the futures go down in part because, oh, geez, what a great excuse to sell. I mean, Scott, I go away, but I check the market. I said, are you kidding me? Like, nothing's happened. And the market keeps going up. We're going to lose some froth.
These are the kind of mornings I suspect, Jim, you're scanning the market looking for things that are down that shouldn't be.
Oh, I sure am. I mean, you have to look. Let's say that the operative thesis is going to be we're going into a recession. So therefore, you got to sell things other than defense, because you'll always see Northrop Grumman and usual suspects. This is like, round up the usual suspects. It's like Casablanca. So we buy Lockheed Martin, we buy Northrop Grumman, and we sell, Ingersoll Rand. I mean, you can make it up.
Yeah, the airlines. I mean,
Airlines trouble because we have to figure out what to do with Boeing. This could be the year of Boeing, by the way. I mean, try to figure out what the year of. I mean, we have two guys who push price targets up for Apple. Apple's down. I mean, that's probably what people should be looking at. Now, the one thing I worry about is everyone's bumping their Apple price targets. That's historically been a wrong time to buy. Last year today, they slashed their price targets. But I am saying that if you want to scalp Advanced Micro, Apple, the winners.
You got a couple of price targets, to your point, bumps on Apple this morning to 330. The stock goes above 300 for the first time.
Yeah, so they're yesterday. Chasing. They're chasing. But I think that people are beginning to realize that the iPhone 11 is not what people thought it was. It is a miracle. And it's just a step function higher. By the way, Tim Cook periodically invents new. I use the noise-canceling headphone, crying baby. I love crying babies. I love them. I mean, they're always my favorite when I'm in the plane because I love babies. But it was nice not to hear them.
So all that said, if there is a, let's say, prolonged escalation of tension, if not more severe circumstances in the Middle East, and crude does continue its rise, it pushes past 70 and maybe even goes towards 80, as some are suggesting this morning, that's not necessarily a good scenario for not only the global economy, but the market at large, is it?
No, but the Saudi capacity. Remember how much was taken out? And it didn't move things up. You do need a prolonged experience to be able to get oil to move. But we have oil companies that have been waiting for this forever. You'll notice Oxy's up this morning. I mean, Oxy's breathing a sigh of relief. Maybe they won't have covenant issues. I mean, a lot of our oil companies, you see the prices? So they have a good opportunity. And watch Core Labs. Is Core Labs right? Perhaps. But I just think that there's no reason to be excited other than gold, which I think continues its trajectory upward. And the dollar. Jeez, the dollar goes down so often.
Dollar's at a nine-week low. Well, and gold is at a four-month high.
Well, okay, you're Coca-Cola. You're James Quincy. All right? You've been waiting for this forever. Now, he is not waiting for an assassination. Hey, let's say President Trump was right, and this guy was planning multiple things against the U.S., and he's been taken out. If he had been able to do what he wanted, wouldn't that be a huge escalation? And now I hear from people, well, there's five more guys like that. We've seen over and over when it comes to, the state of Israel, that there aren't five more guys. There's like a lull. But I just wonder, if he hadn't been killed, what was going to happen? Were they going to take out the U.S. embassy? Were they going to destroy it? That's the war. The war is to destroy the U.S. embassy. I think a lot of people were betting that there would be that kind of activity. I mean, you know, or you were going to have another one of these sieges, you know, a 440-day siege. Well, maybe this was the guy who was planning the siege. So, I don't know. I'm not, you know, when you assassinate someone, it's always cause for thinking about it. But if he was a bad guy who was going to kill our service people, well, isn't it better to prevent that? I'm not being facetious.
Understand. I certainly understand where you're going on that. And you've talked about oil and, you know, supply demand.
Oh, my, you know.
And a different point in time.
Look at the curve.
Oil would be up on an event like this.
Get the curve. That's a tough thing to get, I know.
You can make the argument this is you know, the most severe escalation of tensions between the United States and Iran in some time.
Yeah.
At another point in time, if the oil supply and dynamic was in a different place, oil would be up by more than 3 or 4%, don't you think? It's a statement in and of itself about where we are in the complex that oil is only up by this amount.
All right, so Iraq invades Kuwait in August. Let's go back to August 1 of 1990. I mean, Schlumberger was up about 15% before the market opened. I mean, Schlumberger, my charitable trust owns Schlumberger. What is it up, like 80 cents? 80 cents. I mean, think about it. The number one oil service company in the world, BP. BP is arguably, it yields 6%, Safefield. I mean, that thing can't get to 39. I mean, these stocks are unbelievably bad. And a lot of it is because they're viewed as being wasting assets by millennial money managers who are trying to unload.
Oil's been unbelievably good, and these stocks have been unbelievably bad.
Well, you can't. There's so much oil coming. The pipes can't handle all the oil. Our shipping can't handle all the oil. Plus, we block Costco. It's not the Costco. It's COSCO. And what do you have? You have the Chinese tankers not being in operation. You have U.S. tankers. Costs a lot of money to ship. I mean, all of this is making a very convoluted situation with oil. And I know some people are saying that a lot of people are saying bad things about Soleimani. All I'm saying is that they're not saying that this is strategic. They're saying it's just tactical. But it might be strategic by the president to head off something that could really drive the market down.
You know, before this event took place last night, where we think around 8 o'clock, we would have come in today, and it would be your first day back after the holiday, which we're thankful and happy to have you back.
Sure, thank you.
And we would be talking about a market that looks ready to continue to go higher.
Apple will be up 10 points. I mean, start the day up 3. And then when these price target bumps, I mean, they're about the 11. They're about the air, you know, about their professional. They're about the shortages, I mean, which is just store by store, by the way. And instead, what we're talking about is something that knocks Apple down. But how's Apple affected? How's Micron affected? How's Advanced Micro? Well, the only thing that's affected is that people are up so much. You think Lisa Su's sitting there right now and saying, this is going to hurt our Italian, all the ones are named after Italian. You know, it's just like a travelogue thing going, like a triptych. I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but they're all called, like, Rome. I'm waiting here for Florence because I like Florence. Milan.
This could still take maybe you know, this happens on a Friday. Market's going
to
digest it for the balance of the day.
Good reason to sell. Monday, something happens this weekend, talk shows, the president escalates, market comes down more Monday. So I would not be excited about jumping in here because, geez, we're not giving up enough. When I got up, futures were down 47. I don't know. It was up, quarter three. Bummer. Hey, I'm back, though. Quarter three is a good time to get up. I danced till quarter three when I was on vacation. But I looked at things. I said, okay, maybe there's a chance. Maybe you get a chance to buy PepsiCo because they're doing well with the dollar down. But no. So let's wait. You know what? We should speak to Richard Engel. He's on the phone.
We should. In fact, joining us now on the phone is NBC News Chief Foreign Correspondent Richard Engel. He is making his way to a region he knows better than anybody else. Richard, it's good to have you on the phone this morning. Can you help our viewers understand, first and foremost, why this target is so important?
Yeah, so once again, I'm heading to the Middle East because once again, it looks like we are going to have a conflict, an armed conflict of some shape between the United States and Iran. And the reason is because of the unique importance of General Qasem Soleimani. General Qasem Soleimani, who was killed by a U.S. drone strike at Baghdad International Airport, which itself shows the importance. The United States decided they were going to target Qasem Soleimani when he was in a car with a Shiite militia leader at the airport without telling Iraq this was happening, according to Iraqi government officials, and killing him, the Shiite militia leader, and several other people who were in that convoy. So a very dramatic escalation. And the reason it's so important and the reason there's such a concern for a reprisal from Iran, which could lead to a cycle of violence, is that Qasem Soleimani wasn't just a normal general. He was the one who effectively set the military foreign policy for Iran. He was the one who was in charge of all the relationships with the militia groups, very powerful militia groups, in Yemen, in Lebanon, in Syria, and critically in Iraq. He had this network. He supported this network. He maintained this network. So every time there was an attack carried out in shadowy circumstances by Iran, whether it was one of those tankers that was seized in the Gulf, that we saw Qasem Soleimani's fingerprints on that attack, and it was usually carried out by one of his proxies. Now he's been killed. Iran is vowing revenge, and those proxies are on alert, trying to figure out how they are going to respond. So if there's going to be a military conflict, it's not going to be a tank against tank confrontation. At least that's not the kind of war Iran likes to fight. It's more likely going to be something that's deniable, lots of small groups carrying out attacks, potentially deniable attacks against U.S. interests, most likely in the region. And I think that could have, as the market seems to be showing, a very unnerving and unsettling effect on the markets, particularly on oil, because watch the Strait of Hormuz.
Richard, Jim Cramer, you are a brave man, and it is really greatly appreciated. We just don't have enough people like you. Who's running Iraq? Who's running Iraq? Iran or Iraq?
So this is, and going back to Qasem Soleimani, he was the guy who managed to recognize an opportunity for Iran with the 2003 U.S. invasion. So let's go back a little bit, because that's what we're talking about here. This is an inflection moment. 2003, Saddam Hussein ran Iraq hands down. It was a one-man state run by him, run by a Sunni military, basically secular, at times even pro-American dictator. The United States overthrew him. The Shia majority took over through democracy. That's what happens when you say the majority gets a vote. The majority, which was united by the Shia faith and united behind Shia religious leadership, voted, and they brought themselves into power. Iran, of course, Shia faith, the most powerful Shia state. Well, they decided to form this this alliance, overt and covert, with Iran. And that relationship with Iranian militia groups and Shia militia groups was directed by Qasem Soleimani. He was the guy who basically allowed Iran to carve off large portions of Iraq and assume so much influence in Iraq. But in recent weeks, I don't know, it hasn't gotten as much attention as it has in the United States, as it has in other parts of the world. There have been huge protests on the streets of Baghdad. There have been hundreds, literally hundreds of people shot by Iraqi security forces. And those protesters were arguing against Iranian influence. They say it went too far, that Iran took too much advantage of the disorder that followed the U.S. invasion, and that Iraq had become effectively an Iranian vassal state. Now, with this attack, it gives an opportunity for Iran to change the narrative, to say, we're not the bad guys. We are the victims here. The United States, they're the aggressors. They're the state sponsors of terrorists. So it is an inflection point, because there has been, since 2003, this tug of war, for 1,400 years, really, but specifically since 2003, this tug of war over how much influence the Shias have in Iran. And Qasem Soleimani knew how to play that and played it exceptionally well for the last 17 years.
Richard, you had the opportunity this morning to speak with the Iraqi president. I'm wondering what you can tell us about your conversation, what he's thinking about what may be happening in the region.
Well, he's thinking about the future of his country, and he's very worried about it. Bahram Saleh is somebody I've known for quite some time. I know him personally. He's very worried. He was said that that the country is precarious, that it's fragile, that it doesn't need another cycle of violence. Iraq pulled itself out of the civil war that followed the U.S. invasion. Then it managed to sidestep the Arab Spring, and then recently it's had these very violent protests over the nature of Iranian influence in the country. He says it wouldn't take much to send the country down into a new spiral of violence. And he was urging restraint on all sides. He's reaching out to the Shia religious leadership in the country. He's trying to prevent this from escalating quickly and badly, because if Iran takes an action, if it sends its militias back to the U.S. Embassy, and those were Iranian-backed militias that were there smashing the security cameras at the U.S. Embassy, if it sends them back there, if it carries out an attack on U.S. interests in Iraq specifically, then the U.S. could respond very quickly, and then we're off to the races, because while Iran likes to fight a proxy war, the United States doesn't really know how to fight that kind of war. That's not the style of the United States military. The U.S. military picks targets and attacks them. Iran's a much more subtle, deniable way of waging warfare. So he's concerned that this now, I don't think it's escalating tension anymore. I think it's some sort of armed conflict has begun. We'll see if it stays low level or stays acceptable to both sides without escalating to a full-on war. He's worried that this is going to happen in his own country, and he says that Iraq has had too many wars over the last 40 years. It doesn't need another one.
Before I let you run, Richard, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo this morning saying the strike was in response to a, quote, imminent threat to American lives. Do we have any idea what kind of threat and where the Secretary of State might be referring to?
Not really. If you watch specifically what he said, it was that they were in the planning stages of another attack on U.S. interests. So it's not clear if they believe that the U.S. was that Qasem Soleimani was in Iraq in order to plot and plan and meet, or that he was in Iraq to talk about plotting and planning and carrying out some sort of future attack. There may be some legal ease in here that I think the U.S., according to its own international laws that it has signed up to, would need to say that there was an imminent threat in order to carry out a targeted assassination like that. It couldn't just do it without giving the smoking gun analogy. We had to do this because there was an imminent threat. There was a loaded weapon pointed at us. Therefore, we had to take this sort of action. So there may be very, very specific intelligence, or frankly, that could be just the rationale that was given. I don't know. I'm not in a position to know. Maybe the U.S. officials, Pompeo and others, will give more details.
Richard, we appreciate your time. We wish you well as you head to that region. That's Richard Engel, NBC News chief foreign correspondent, joining us there by the phone.
Well, he's good. I mean, it's, to me, somewhat reassuring what he said. If there really is an Iraqi government, and there really are people who don't want to destroy our embassy, and there's someone who was there who wanted to, then the notion of it being targeted rather than it be, again, remember, if it's precise and surgical, that certainly is better than shock and awe. We'd be down big.
We're going to open in 10 minutes. Is there a point today where people, you know, are able to have the ability to step back, like you suggest, and look at what shouldn't be down?
Not today. This is day one. I mean, I'm not saying it's the end of the world. I'm saying day one is rarely the best day. Day two, you start seeing the opportunity to buy a Pfizer or Lilly, unaffected. That typically is, and that happens between 2 and 3. I hate to be as precise as I am, but that's tactical.
All All right, we will take a quick break. Up next, it's Kramer's first mad dash of the new year. We count down to the opening bell. Let's take a look at futures once more as well. Stocks are going to open lower this morning. The Dow would be down by about 270, NASDAQ by more than 100, and the S&P down about 33.5. More Squawk on the Street from the New York Stock Exchange is straight ahead. All right, welcome back. Bell's going to ring in about 7 minutes. Time now for the first mad dash of the new year with Jim Cramer.
It's good to be back.
Open. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, it's just funny. You come back and you realize what a great market last year was. And I think that barring something like this going on for days on end, we're hearing from Richard Engel, you're going to get a chance to buy. So let me give you one.
Okay.
If someone is really itching to buy today, you buy Humana. Why? Because Goldman Sachs added to conviction list. It has nothing to do with the rec. Now, are they early? Well, they have liked it. But this is the kind of thing that you buy because it won't be down by the end of the day. So scalper alert. Who do you have on at 12?
You think the trend is up?
Oh, yeah. And look, this group, you know, 2021, somehow some of us who love this group have been still trying to figure out why the health insurer industry fee went away. I mean, how did this group get to be the most favored group? This was the group that everybody hated going into into Trump's election, and now it's loved. And so if you feel so inclined and you want to buy something at the opening, it's down, that could finish up at the end of the day. It is Humana. I am very conscious that I'm from Philadelphia. At my 45th reunion, I said, you guys all talk really strange. So did I. So however, H-U-M-A-N-A, how do you spell Humana? Did I say you pronounce it right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Well, that would be the one that you would buy. Wait till it's down.
Instead of Humana?
Yes, exactly. Wait till it's down. Don't buy it up 0.87. That's fool's gold. And then you get a chance.
All right, you're going to have your pick of a lot of stocks that are going to be down off the open today.
Right. So. I do like the beverages and the drugs, but again, too early. Come on, you got the whole weekend. You got to do some fretting and worry. Well, not you, because your team got out. Like, I think you guys. Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. Don't even start.
Congratulations.
All right.
On something. I don't know what it is.
Still to come, how might geopolitical tensions impact the Fed? Stick around for an interview with the Chicago Fed president, Charles Evans. Take another look at futures as well. We've told you already it's going to be a down open. After that big gain yesterday, Dow's going to give a lot of it back, down 270 off the open. S&P down 33.5. NASDAQ down almost 112. More Squawk on the Street in a moment. We count down to the opening bell. You're watching CNBC Squawk on the Street live from the financial capital of the world. The opening bell set to ring in just about 2 minutes' time. We're going to have our eye, obviously, on the major averages, but we should definitely keep an eye throughout the day on crude oil. WTI right now is up about 3.5%, pretty much where Brent is as well.
Yeah.
And then the fallout from the stocks that would be most hit by a spike in crude.
What's interesting is that the times we've had something really big in the Mideast, the stocks used to telegraph it. They've been up for days. This is what I'm saying typically happens. And the smart people sell. Now, this is a time when that hasn't occurred. And it hasn't occurred because what people are looking at is the balance sheets of so many of these that are stretched. People are looking at the fact that no matter what seems to happen, oil doesn't go up. Again, I focus on that Saudi drone attack. So I'd be very careful about the group. The one that my Chapel Trust owns and bought lower is Schlumberger. And there's a difficult one. I mean, Schlumberger is fantastic, balance sheet good. The CEO is committed to the dividend. Maybe sell.
SLB is going to be up a little less than a buck.
Oh, my God.
This morning.
That's all?
It is. A little less than a buck to about 2.5%.
I mean, honestly, in the last quarter, we saw some green shoots. A lot of the internationals, the nation states have been having to replenish, so they've gotten a lot of orders. I look at these high quality stocks. By the way, Halliburton is a high quality stock. Look at, there's one if you want to buy it. I like the service stocks more than I like the oils themselves.
You're barely going to get about the oils themselves. Exxon, Chevron barely getting a bump. I mean, they'll open in the green, but
the defense stocks are getting more of a bump. I mean, but this is the reality of the new money managers. You've got to put your head in the millennium. I know this is going back, but in 1983, 84, I went to the guy who was running Harvard at the time, and I said, you got to divest coal, wherever it is. You just got to divest it. And energy stock, the ones that connect with coal, divest. It was one of the great trades ever. I was a millennial. Well, I guess they didn't call us. What did they call us then? If you were 26 in 1983, what were you? Generation what?
Wet behind the ears?
I hadn't thought about that. But anyway, I'm just saying that there's just a group of people who have been anxious to get rid of these stocks. I like gold. I continue to like gold.
Yeah, gold's having a move.
Gold is real. Gold is Agnico. Okay, you buy Agnico, they are growing. I mean, they have good growth, good balance sheet, dividend policy. That's what you buy. You want to know what you buy? You buy Agnico.
Let me mention the bell ringers here at the big board. Contour Brands, the professional bull riders, are also here celebrating Unleash the Beast Madison Square Garden this weekend.
Go buy Boot Barn, will you?
There's some going to try and stay on the bull today,
Jim. But go buy Boot Barn. It's a good opportunity. I know that's not what they're here for, but Boot Barn's really great. Matthew Boss identified a Boot Barn literally half of where it is, and he still loves it. So isn't that an example? I bet you they bought their hats at Boot Barn. It's the only place to get the stuff. I have a Boot Barn hat. I use it to garden with. I look like an idiot.
The Dow's opened down 1%, about 300 at the NASDAQ. New York Cares, a volunteer network in New York City in honor of its annual coat drive, ringing the bell in Midtown.
You know what we haven't talked about yet, and we're really, really lax at doing so? Tesla! Why haven't we mentioned Tesla? Here it is again.
Just hadn't gotten to it yet.
367,000 cars. I was looking for 360,000. What a made-up number. I was looking for 360,000. I was looking for 359,000. I mean, what a joke. I mean, sorry. Ill-advised way to look at a stock. But the fact is that Tesla has defeated the shorts. Whether you like it or hate it, it defeated the shorts. What do you think?
So Tesla yesterday got a price target bump, I think, to 515.
So I'll see you at 515 and raise you to 575.
You're getting a ratcheting up of expectations about the best case scenario for where the stock
is. Well, I mean, look, they're making a lot of cars. There have been so many downgrades of Ford and so many price target bumps of Tesla that you should be tempted to buy Ford, but I'm not. Because Tesla's the car of the future, and if they do sell a lot, car of the future. What is it, like Back to the Future? But if they sell a lot in China, I know they cut the price, so the bears are telling me, Jim, don't you dare say anything good about Tesla. Thank you, bears, for... You guys should go back to Jellystone National Park. Hey, boo-boo, I think you should short Tesla all the way to 200. I think this thing does not stop. It does not... I mean, they make a lot of cars, and they sell a lot of cars. That's novel. What does GM do?
By the way, Ford yesterday got a downgrade to sell.
Sell.
Partly to your point. I mean, that's where the action is, right? It's on Tesla, buy it. It's on Ford, sell it. Well, that's where sentiment is right now on the street.
Tesla makes a lot of cars, and they're going to make, people are talking about $5 earnings power next year. Now, obviously, look, Elon Musk changed. Elon Musk is now the most serious executive in autos. He doesn't tweet silly things. You've got to respect the man. A lot of people feel that I have like decided that I can deal with the fact that he called me a hologram. I don't care. I'm not sensitive.
The other story we haven't been able to hear from you is the remarkable tale of Carlos Ghosn and his escape from
Argo.
Lebanon.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
What do you make of that whole thing?
Drama. Incredible drama. I don't know. I mean, wow.
Was that a Trump?
Did he say it like that?
What you were trying to do.
No. Jesus. Oh, my. Oh, my wife's going to kill me. I'm now sounding like him without any...
It sounded like it.
She doesn't watch the darn show, thank heavens. Nor does anybody else that she's associated with, unless I have dog pictures. Doesn't mean anything to her. Look, I just think it's an amazing story. I mean, the house arrest was not as rigorous. I guess he didn't have the ankle bracelet. Look, that makes him a little more guilty in my eyes, but he's going to tell his story in Lebanon.
Oh, we have more details.
He was a serious executive at one point.
Yes,
like a guy who ran a major company. Isn't that incredible?
We do have more details this morning regarding that story from our Phil LeBeau.
Oh, he's
Phil.
Scott, a couple of things going on with Carlos Ghosn, and they revolve around whether or not we're learning more details. And we do have a few more regarding how he was able to get out of Japan. Among those details is the fact that the country of Japan, the investigators there, are looking into how Carlos Ghosn went from the house where he was living in Tokyo, where he was under house arrest. He went from there 300 miles away to Osaka, because that's where he got on a business jet. The business jet then took him from Osaka to Turkey, then from Turkey onto Lebanon. And speaking of that business jet, the private jet company, MNG Jet, which operates the two jets there, they have filed a criminal complaint against one of their employees. Now, they're not naming who the employee is, but they make it very clear in the criminal complaint they had no idea that Carlos Ghosn was going to be shuttled from Japan to Turkey and then Turkey onto Lebanon. So as you take a look at the journey that Carlos Ghosn was engaged in, Sunday into Monday morning, and we don't know all the exact times, but that's the general time frame. Sunday into Monday. Remember, he went not from Tokyo, but from Osaka, then to Turkey, then from Turkey on to Beirut. And the MNG jet says that an employee of theirs helped Carlos Ghosn on that flight. By the way, Carlos Ghosn says he plans to talk to the media sometime in the next week so he can start to tell his side of the story. This is a little taste of what it's like outside of his house in Beirut. Reporters trying to get any kind of a glimpse that they can, either through the windows or of the few cars that have come and gone. We will hear from Carlos Ghosn next week, guys. I know he wants to tell his side of the story in terms of being accused of crimes he says he didn't commit. But the main question that he's going to get over and over, and I'm sure he will say, I'm not talking about it, is how exactly did he arrange to leave Japan? Because he says he got no help from his family, that he arranged this 100% on his own.
Apparently there was a report I saw this morning of some video that's emerged or some sort of reporting that he was seen leaving his house by himself to sort
right.
of back up
I've seen that. I've seen that. And he was allowed to leave his house for short walks in the area or to go to the market, etc. So when we say he was under house arrest, this was not like true, like 100% ankle bracelet, you're not leaving the premises arrest.
Right.
It was house arrest in the sense of he was seen walking around areas near his home in Tokyo.
All right, Phil, we'll come back to you certainly. You know what? Let me hit with you while I have you, if you don't mind. The Tesla
Boeing.
News. Well, let's do
okay.
Tesla. We were just talking about Tesla, these deliveries, and the numbers we just got.
Look, they beat the minimum expectation. The minimum guidance from Tesla was 360 to 400,000. They come in at 367,000, a little bit better. There were some people who were expecting it to be like 355, 356. And I said this yesterday, Scott, and I stick by it today. That is not what is driving this stock higher. What's driving this stock higher is the beginning of production and sales in China, the world's largest electric vehicle market, and also the expectation that the Model Y, when they start to roll that out, the margins on the Model Y, because it shares so many components along with the Model 3, you add that into the mix with China, the potential here for them to boost margins is the reason that this stock is moving higher and why you're getting these higher price targets.
Yeah, Phil, could you please explain to people how amazing it is that they built a factory in 10 months?
I mean, and whether
any other No, wasn't that incredible?
No. And I think that's part of the psychological change that we've seen with some people when it comes to shares of Tesla and how they view Tesla. They set that target and they hit that target. In fact, they were a couple of months ahead of schedule in terms of the China plant and China production. And you see a company that is much more disciplined than it was just a few years ago. Doesn't mean that there won't be delays along the way. And it doesn't mean that Elon, will stop making pronouncements that perhaps are a little bit too aggressive, to say it mildly. We're still going to see that. But I think people now are looking at them and saying, look, if China pays off the way that we think it could pay off, this is huge. It's a game changer. And make no mistake. In the world of electric vehicles, guys, you will hear everybody say, there's competition coming, there's competition coming. They dominate. They dominate the market. And until they are proven to not be the dominant automaker in electric vehicles, they enjoy that advantage.
There it is.
Before we let you go, totally one more thing. We'll make it a triple. You got something for Boeing?
No.
Phil?
Oh, Boeing. No, I just think that they're in the process. And I feel it's a process at this point, right?
Yeah.
I can't say more than that.
Jim, you look at the next let's say, 6 to 8 weeks between now and mid-February. That's really crucial to see if they make some progress there. And they are working with the FAA, and it's likely that we do see some type of certification flight. But one thing you're not going to see from Dave Calhoun, you are not going to see him put out some kind of a target and say, we're going to have this by this date. He is more focused on making sure that they work with the FAA and that the FAA says, yeah, this is what you need to do.
Phil, look, I flew to an island in the Caribbean, and I can't tell you how many people said, did you fly with that particular airline because they are Airbus? I mean, this is Boeing we're talking about. Boeing's a great American company. It is shocking to me how people just say, well, I want to be on an Airbus. I don't want to be on a Boeing. When can Boeing make it so that, I mean, geez, this Max. I mean, can they something so substantive?
Yeah. No, Jim, I think that it's going to take several months for them to get past that. I think once it starts again, and look, we are going to have both on social media as well as other reports of, let's say somebody takes off on a Max flight. You know, every day there are dozens of airliners that turn around for a variety of reasons. They turn around, they go back, and they make a landing at the airport. When that happens with a Max plane in the first couple of months, you will immediately hear people say, oh boy, here we go. There's a problem with the Max. There's a problem with the Max. It's going to take them some time to get past this. That's just the reality. There's nothing else you can do. You can't brand your way out of this. You can work with the airlines to try to reassure customers, but at the end of the day, you just need to get past it. And I think it's going to take, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 months before you finally hear people stop bringing it up.
All right. Phil, we appreciate it. LeBeau handles everything.
Now, what do we think about the fact that the biggest stories right now are Tesla and the fact that they've been able to conquer China? And Boeing, what are these saying? I mean, Boeing, obviously, a national treasure. It has to be kept alive, no matter what. Tesla's gone from being a joke, according to the Bears, to being something that, after they built the China, just like Phil said, he said, listen, it changed the cat. It's no longer, it's now like a great American manufacturer like Boeing, except for it's not tainted. So, I mean, I'm just, these are both great American manufacturers, and people like them more than all these fabulous tech stocks. I mean, people like Tesla more than any tech stock.
Let's talk about a tech stock.
Which
Apple.
One?
Apple.
Yeah, it's barely down.
Given up 300, but barely. Yesterday closed 330, crossed 300 for the first time ever. It's 299 and change.
Can't it just go down for a little bit? I mean, I say own it, don't trade it, but. Yeah. You know, some. I mean, when everyone's chasing like this, it's not been the time to buy. And you know how I feel about Apple.
I know you love it, but is it too high at 300? Makes
sense.
No, it's
just, you know, I just don't. Today, last year, we had all these price cut, target prices cut. We had some very big downgrades. Well, here we have upgrades, and they love it. That's not necessary. The time to buy is when they hate it. Now, I say own it, but now you're going to get a chance. I mean, how can this, the stock is barely down.
I mean, the time to buy this thing, if you didn't own it or you wanted to add, was when it was sub 150 a year ago or whenever
that's when
was.
People, I mean,
8 months ago.
Every time it stocks down, there are people, including some who come on your show, nice people, who say that the best times are behind. They denigrate. Someone denigrated Tim Cook in my Twitter file.
I
sparked him. I mean, I said, listen, Sparky, get a life. Look, I mean, this has changed everybody's life. And it wasn't just, there's like Tim Cook runs the company. Did Tim Cook runs? He came out under Tim Cook. Biggest problem, the stores are too crowded, high quality.
Sure, but it's, the stock is up like 90%.
It's being valued as a consumer product company that has suddenly, I have a lifetime value. And don't forget, Apple TV Plus just gets the Game of Thrones guy? Plepler? I thought they were a bunch of clowns in Apple
chief.
TV. Aren't they clowns? I mean, what kind of clowns can get the number one guy? They ain't clowns.
Playoffs!
I mean, honest to God. I mean, they're not clowns. I mean, they're the best company in the world. Tim Cook's the best CEO. I wanted him to be named the Time Man of the Year, but, you know, they had to, you know, Greta's fabulous and
Apple's got 300 back, 350 cents. We'll watch where that stock does. There's some other technology stocks.
Look at it, down 5 cents.
You know,
give it a break. Peloton's up. Will you stop? What?
You went to Peloton, so I'll go there with you. Yesterday, Mark Mahaney put out his list of internet surprises for this coming year. Mm-hmm. And one of them was that the IPO duds, and Peloton was on his list, was going to be one of the winners this year.
If
along
Uber,
with Uber and Lyft, which he says are going to get profitability in 2020.
All Uber has to do is close the stupid Uber Eats or offload it to Grub. Don't buy anything, Grub. They got to get the stock. They love the stock higher. Or sell it to one of these, like, guys with the Japanese, you know, with the Masa-san. I know he did. Yes, he had some big hits. But all you got to do is get rid of it.
SoftBank.
I know SoftBank. I just didn't want to say their name. It's too mean.
I say it. I just want to make sure everybody else knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's like... It's like saying the former CEO of GE. I don't do these things anymore.
Not everybody has, you know, Masa-san on the
No, but I'm,
their tongue,
I'm not.
You know?
I'm not saying these guys because then when I start calling people clowns, I get in trouble. Who do I get in trouble with? Calling these people? Look,
you're
I just
back. Don't get into trouble on your first day back.
No, no. Oh, look, I'm just. No, I don't. But I just think that Uber has a easy plan. They just have to get rid of the 50% of the love of what is the cities that are losing money. I know that business. That is the crummiest. I got guys fighting to deliver my pizza, which got an 8.2 from One Bite and crushed it. One of the best in Brooklyn. No, I'm not kidding. What is the worst business in the world? People come in, they like give you, they fight to have my business. I they make very little money. Who wants to be in the?
Oh, the pizza at your restaurant.
No, the pizza I buy, my Elio's pizza from my freezer. I know we got to move on, but I can just say that if they close that, Uber goes to 45 instantly.
All right. Bob Pisani's on the floor with What's Moving. Hey, Bob, busy morning.
Good morning, guys. Happy Friday. This is a great example of what Don Rumsfeld called the known unknowns. We knew about tensions with Iran. We did not know that it would take this kind of turn, though. Known unknowns. Great phrase from Rumsfeld. Rather predictable turn in the stock market here. Some, not all energy stocks moved up. Gold miners are moving up. Gold's been pretty good recently. It's near a six-year high. What, we were 15, 60 or so a couple of months ago, but we're not far from breaking through that. Semis and China stocks, which have had a great run recently, down a little bit here, working off some oversold conditions. Elsewhere in the energy patch, your high beta energy names, these are stocks that always move a lot more than the overall market. Marathon, Apache, Devon moving here. Over in London, you might be surprised, like BP and Royal Dutch, only 1 to 2% moves. If this was 10 or 15 years ago and this happened, there would be a lot more violent moves. It's a much, much different world in the energy sector than it was 10 years ago, and certainly 30 and 40 years ago, where these would have had titanic moves back then. You might want to look at shipping companies here. Shipping had a very good fourth quarter on hopes that the trade and tariff wars would lessen and we'd see some kind of bottoming in the global economy. Most of these names moved up. Moeller, which trades over in Denmark, probably the biggest shipping company in the world, just down 1%. Matson, which is a Dow transport company, also a shipping company, just down fractionally here. Kirby, also a Dow transport company, very involved in energy shipping, oil shipping containers, also just down. These are fairly modest declines that we're seeing overall here. Airlines, another typical thing that you would see here when the higher oil prices, American and Delta, a little more violent move there for American. Deutsche over in Europe, Air France down about 6%, EasyJet. This is a little more noticeable in terms of what's going on. As always, folks, we talk about exchange-traded funds. There are ETFs associated with all of these. Here's your aerospace. This is ITA and defense sector, up fractionally. Oil and gas, XOP is what you want to look at, and that's the sector that's being most affected today in terms of the energy complex. There is a shipping ETF that's out there that shows all these global shipping companies that I just talked about recently. That's SEA. C is the symbol for that. And then there is a global airline ETF, JETS, down 2.8%. But outside of the airline stocks and a couple shipping names, as you can see, fairly modest. Remember, we're fairly overbought right now here. So some big names that are out there are having the chance just to recalibrate a little, particularly some of those China stocks that we've seen really roaring. Remember, Alibaba hit a new high yesterday. Scott, back to you.
Bob, appreciate it.
Just something, Alibaba, because it's still not that expensive. Pioneer, PXD is the one, if you want to spec. They could get bought. They're doing well. That's the only spec in the group that I would go for. PXD, Pioneer.
We're going to take a quick break, give you another look at the markets where we've come off the lows by a good amount. Dow's is still down 186. Major averages are all in the red, but not nearly as bad as the picture was very early this morning. Squawk on the Street, we'll be right back. Welcome back. Give you a look at the Dow 30 heat map. One stock at this moment is in the green. What complex do you think that's from? The oil complex. Oil complex. It's Chevron. Everything else, well, there's Boeing. Boeing just went into the green. Let's see
that's
if
incredible.
Any more do as well. We'll follow that, of course. We'll take a quick break. Up next is Stop Trading with Jim. Time now for Cramer and Stop Trading.
I mentioned specs earlier, Pioneer. Here's one. L Brands, not my fave, but Bank of America says we are at the tipping point for Victoria's Secret. They might do something good. And most importantly, Bath & Body Works. They say if they spin it off, it's worth a fortune. Now, it's low risk. It's not my fave, but I'm giving specs out because I don't think this is a good day to do investments. I want people to wait until Monday at least. They're so anxious. People want to throw money at the market. That's never been good. You see the greed fear index? It's at the maximum greed, the CNN. I don't like that.
Yeah, you've been suggesting on Twitter, why buy so soon? Like, let it go down a little bit.
Yeah, there's some guys there, a bunch of sparkies that want to buy right here.
What do you got on Matt tonight?
I have a very exciting company. I have CrowdStrike. I am a huge
In Sunnyvale, California.
Yeah. I am a huge cybersecurity guy. All this does, the attack in Iran, you know, people want to buy Northrop Grumman. Go buy cybersecurity. That's what these guys do. That's what North Korea does. That's what Iran does. They hack us. So you need companies like CrowdStrike. I really like CrowdStrike, by the way. I like Palo Alto Networks, too, because they're reforming their situation. No, I had them on, and I did not speak positively, and I know they are doing great things at Palo Alto. They're changing the company.
Great to have you back. We'll see you on Mad tonight.
I love being back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
This vacation stuff, so overrated.
No, it's not.
No?
No, it's going to be back, though.
I know.
You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.